Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Final hour of Grant and Danny on the Fan, brought to you by Geico, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. We always kick off our last hour of the show at 1 with the big one, presented by your local Honda dealer. Get clearance deals during the Happy Honda Day sales event. You can visit your local Honda dealer today. Nikki Javala joins us with the latest on Washington football right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. And Nikki, why don't we start with now your chat with Ron Rivera today. Anything newsy come out of, anything juicy come out of his press conference the day after a rare win for the good guys?
He was in a good mood. That was definitely apparent. I don't know that anything, you know, totally newsworthy, but he had some interesting things to say about Alex and the team as a whole and kind of where it stands. I go back to, you know, week four, week five, when he made the decision to bench Dwayne Haskins and kind of shift gears. And to many people, myself included, it seemed contradictory to his original message to really develop the team and focus on the long term, as opposed to, you know, going for this short term glory and chasing the NFC East crown. But I think what we're seeing now is kind of the the plan behind all of that. You can see the team really starting to develop and gel. And I think a big credit goes to Alex Smith and how he's been able to come back and really hold things together. But I think that was the most promising thing, not just in, you know, yesterday's game, but over the last few weeks, even in those close losses, you really see the resilience of the team and how the young players are really standing out. You can kind of pick out their foundational players for the future and get a sense for where this team is going. I think for the first time in a long time, you start to see tangible progress. And that's been one of the most encouraging signs.
Nikki, we all haven't been pro athletes, but we've all had jobs where new leadership comes in and they try to instill their way. And when they tell you, follow me and you'll have success, do what I want you to do and you'll have success. If there isn't some success, it becomes harder to follow that person. I think that's human nature. I think that's natural. I kind of argued this earlier in the show, but I want to get your take. I think they needed some validation. I think they needed something to go right for Ron Rivera and his crew here. Even if it's just one meaningless win against a bad team without their star quarterback, they still needed something to reinforce in the positive camp that there is something light at the end of the tunnel for this process. I'd love for you to speak to that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, you can have a lot of good teams and a lot of really smart coaches, but, you know, if you keep losing, you know, the things are going to fray. I've seen that, you know, many times. But I think the glue here is Ron Rivera. And again, going back to Alex Smith, and I think a lot of it is their track record. players speak incredibly highly of playing alongside Alex Smith. Ron Rivera, I think his reputation as a head coach is pretty well known. You know, he doesn't have the winningest record, but he is very much a so-called player's coach. They trust him. They feel like he has their best interests at heart. And so while they weren't winning at first and there were many close games and frustration, certainly, you could always sense that there was that belief in him. And I think you could see that because, you know, so often teams could just quit in the third quarter. You see it on a number of franchises. You know, they're losing. They've been losing for a long time. Things aren't working. There are mistakes constantly. And they just kind of give up. Whereas this team, you know, they were always kind of fighting and still in it, even in games they lost. And I honestly think that speaks volumes. It sounds cliche and cheesy, but it really does show kind of the grit of the team and what they have. And, winning helps. I think that Cowboys game, it was against a crappy team, no doubt. But a win's a win, and it helps. And I think, you know, going back to my original point about, you know, that kind of changing course and moving on to a more experienced quarterback, Ron could see that, how the winning could change, you know, the mentality and kind of develop things in a more indirect way going forward.
Nikki Javala of The Post. Defensively in the second half, 2 first downs allowed, 25 total yards, 18 rushing, 7 net passing, and 1 of 7 allowed on third down. How much credit should we give Jack Del Rio? How much of that is the Burrow injury? And what did you think of the D buckling down?
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, you know, the game definitely changed the moment Joe Burrow went down. And you hate seeing that. You feel like almost every week anymore, there's been some really, really terrible injury. And it's honestly disheartening to watch. But I do think the defense had a much better approach and came away with a more complete game. And you could see them making changes. I mean, even in the first half, they rotated their middle linebackers on every series, pretty much. I think their entire first series, they were a nickel, and they had Kevin Pierre-Lewis and Cole Holcomb at the mic. The second series, they come out with Thomas Davis and John Bostic. And they were rotating guys in and out. They were trying things to make it work better. Now, in the second half, you are going against, you know, a backup who hadn't really probably taken many snaps, if any, to really prepare for this game. So they definitely had the advantage there. And, you know, Randy Bullock helped them tremendously with, you know, 2 missed field goals and a missed extra point. So they were helped, certainly, but it was a much better showing overall. I feel like the defensive front did a much better job, got into their creases, and still a little concerned about, you know, parts of the secondary. But, you know, some players had a really strong game, like Ron Darby.
Nikki Javala with us covers the Washington football team for the Washington Post. What about the offense? Cincinnati's defense is bad. And, you know, maybe they could have put more points on the board. I know a missed field goal, but still, you know, 325 yards over the course of a game, still below what the league average is just in a run-of-the-mill game over the course of a season. Not a banner performance by this offense here, start to finish, Nikki. What do we make of their performance in this one?
I think the biggest thing was that they finished their drives. Yeah, their numbers weren't as gaudy as the last game, but, you know, the numbers don't always get you a win, right? So they were able to finish drives. And, you know, I think Alex Smith, his experience, you really saw it in the second half. And Ron even pointed this out with a specific play that I guess to most would just kind of seem like a mundane play during a long drive, but it really showed Alex's experience. And he's methodical. You could say game manager. That always has somewhat of a negative connotation, I believe. But, you know, he controls the clock. He puts the ball in the right spots. He gets, you know, a lot of the younger players where they need to be, and he makes it easier on them. And that's important with such a young roster. And they were able to, you know, get 3 scoring drives, and, you know, the Bengals couldn't answer at all in the second half. That's big. So I thought the offense did really well. It was nice to see the run game really come alive, too, with Antonio Gibson. I think Terry McLaurin's a stud. I think he's grossly underrated in this league still. But, yeah, I think we're starting to see it come together.
Nikki Javala. You're doing a great job. We think you're grossly underrated in this league as well. Thank you so much for the time.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All right, be well. Always appreciate the time. Good insight from Nikki, who covers Washington for the Washington Post. By the way, they want Washington, not football team. They really, really want that. So, like, somebody with the team said, hey, by the way, I've seen a couple times you've said football team. Just go with Washington. Washington, while it works, and I say it a lot, in terms of typing it, when I'm typing all of the other team names, it's weird to me. So, like, when I said yesterday the NFC East, it's the Giants, the Cowboys, the Eagles, to just then put Washington feels weird. Just out of sheer normalcy, I guess, or habit, I like to go cities and cities or mascots and mascots.
Exactly.
But they don't like seeing football team. But
yeah, Dolphins, Washington. It's weird.
It's very weird.
Mascot, city or city.
Washington plays the Bengals? No, Washington plays Cincinnati, or it's the football team plays the Bengals. But I am trying. I know that that's what they want. They want Washington, so I'm going to do what I can. But I need a mascot.
Yeah, I got some things that I want. Do I get to just impose on them?
I got no problem. I really don't. I just need a mascot. So Washington football team is a placeholder for a year. I'll even give you 2 years. No problem. We're not sticking with Washington football team forever. If you're not comfortable enough with football team, then you can't stick with that name.
Yeah, that's on you guys.
That's my Bill Maher. I got a new rule. Ooh. If you don't like hearing football team, then it can't be Washington football team. It's got to be something else. Because I need a mascot. I need something that I can say so when I say Eagles, Giants, Cowboys, I'm not then using a city. Let's go something we loved, something we hated from yesterday's win over the Bengals. Plus, I just tweeted out a really, really funny football highlight at Grant H. Paulson that I want to tell Danny about because it's hysterical and I can't stop watching it from college football this weekend. You're listening to The Fan. Breaking news out of the NFL. Right now we're scheduled for a triple header on Thanksgiving. That could be at risk, though. The Ravens are having an outbreak, reportedly, The Athletic and other sites saying that as many as at least 4 cases of COVID have come back now with multiple players and multiple staffers having positive tests come back this morning. So they've shut down their facility. They're supposed to play Thursday against Pittsburgh. And as of now, the league is saying the game is obviously still going, and they'll do everything they can to get it in because that's a marquee matchup for them. The Thanksgiving night game's huge for the NFL. If they can't have that, then you've got like the Lions and the Texans in Washington and Dallas, which is not quite what the league was hoping for on Thanksgiving. But that's just an update for you that there is some breaking news that the Ravens are dealing with COVID cases. We don't know who those players are or what it means, but the league's going to try to push forward. I tweeted this video out. I don't know if you went and saw it. For people who haven't seen it yet, you can check it out at Grant H. Paulson. I saw this. It was all over Twitter this morning. So this is college football. Illinois is playing Nebraska. Illinois is leading Nebraska 28-10. I guess Nebraska's terrible because Illinois was 1-3, and they're just putting one on Nebraska. Illinois is punting from their own 15-yard line. Snap to the punter, who begins what looks to be his step forward to drop the football onto his foot. Everybody from Nebraska just starts turning and backpedaling and running.
They'll bail out.
Completely bail out. One guy rushes. Everyone else fails to go cover the punt. Well, the punter, on a designed fake punt on like 4th and 12, it looks like, from the 29-yard line, something like that. Maybe 4th and 10 from the 29, I guess. He decides that he's going to pull the football down and he's going to take off. Well, there's nobody within like 20 yards, and none of them know that he's faked it. They're all like running away from him, not looking at him. So he's got easily 20 yards off to his right. He starts running. He's got a blocker directly in front of him, and no exaggeration, at least 20 yards before there's a defender. And he just comes to a complete stop rather than continuing to run behind this blocker that's going to lead him to the first down. And he goes in the complete other direction for no reason. He runs past the only defender that there is, setting up what could have been a block in the back call on the only guy blocking.
Yeah.
He gets away from him, and so he's now in the clear again to the left. Now, he doesn't have as much room to the left, but he's got some room.
He's got enough.
He gets to the 34-yard line. He needs to get to the 39. At the 34, he slows down and completely jukes air. Like, the punter legitimately sidesteps for no reason, like you hit the L button on top of the controller on PlayStation or something. the trigger button on Xbox, and he just kind of jukes to the side, but there's nobody there to juke. So he completely slows down all of his speed.
Yeah, in that moment, I think he looked up and saw a defender and went, ah!
He just juked like 15 yards from the defender?
I don't think it was a juke. I think it was a surprise. Like, you,
like a sidestep?
Instinctively, when you look up, like let's say you're driving your car and you glance down at your phone.
Yeah.
And then 100 yards ahead of you, there are brake lights. And you
that's
go,
a good
ha!
Point.
And you like quickly tap the brakes.
You actually,
I think that's what it was.
You might be 100% right. Because as I watch this now fast, it looks like maybe he just sees. And by the way, he is at the 35 and the closest defender is at the 49. And he sees him and just kind of almost falls over. Now, he eventually gets the first down. Very important. The first down is the 39. He gets past the 40, and he gets to the 45
yards.
And, like, gets run out of bounds.
So
but he could have easily gotten another 15 yards, and he just jukes air, like, multiple times. He literally jukes the 35-yard line.
So there's certain rules that I've never understood in football. Sometimes they're applied, sometimes they're not. Like, for example, there's a special rule that if you're, especially in college, when you're receiving a snap for an extra point or a field goal, you're on a knee. You have the ball, and you're holding it, and you're on a knee. The play should be dead, but I guess they have a special rule that says you can get back up after that, right? Also, an eligible receiver downfield. Everybody's ineligible, and everyone's downfield, and a guy's running with the football. Shouldn't this play have been flagged and come right back? You know what I mean?
No,
like, the linemen are way more than that three-yard bubble. They're all gone.
Yeah,
and he's behind the line of scrimmage.
Not on a punt. I'd have to do some digging on the rules, but on every punt, you've got guys releasing downfield. So I would think, no, that it's not the same as like a
but
pass.
You see it all the time. Like on a not all the time. It's not as if they're calling fake punts all the time. But that's the thing that negates fake punts sometimes, right, is guys get downfield or leak too early or something on a screen pass. I don't know. But, again, there are rules that I guess are special for these sorts of things.
I mean, so if he threw the ball maybe, but he didn't throw the – like you don't see an ineligible receiver on a run from the punter. Just going back, though, to the original premise, if I may.
Please.
Watching this, I've watched this. I'm not doing a bit. I've watched it 50 times now. There is a guy directly in front of him that could pick up anyone oncoming and get him easily past the first down marker on the design of the play, which is to the right. And for no reason, he stops. He comes to a complete stop at the 26-yard line and then goes the other way, stops at the 35 again, and runs out of bounds. I guess all that matters is he got the first down. But that will be the funniest rewatch of film in the history of this team's program when they're all sitting there wondering what in the heck were you doing. I texted this to Tress Way today. I said, dude, you gotta, and he's cracking up. He's like, what?
Tress?
He's like, this dude is a legend.
He's gonna do it. He's just gonna do it on his own.
It's insane. It's I mean, if you haven't seen it, you gotta look at it. It's the funniest thing.
He's
college football
doing it on
is good
his own,
for this,
right?
By the way. You get some of these on college football.
Yeah. He's doing it by himself. He just there's no one here. They all bailed out. I'll just go. It reminds me, do you remember this? It was a couple years ago.
Oh, you think he just decided to do this?
Yeah. Because his teammates aren't expecting it.
Why aren't
I don't
they?
Think. I have no idea. To me, it looks like he goes, I'm going to punt. Well, wait a minute. There's nobody rushing.
Well, that
wait,
adds so much
here.
Genius to the play. If it's
and I think
his
he
call.
Just goes.
I thought it was wrong. A – let me think.
You
oh, you know
playing?
What? I'm looking at this again. No, I think you're right. I don't think this is planned. Because here's the thing, is he's like hesitating, like, should I punt this? Because he even stops at the 20 initially, as if to think, should I punt this?
Yeah.
And then you're right. I think he just thought, wait, there's nobody within 20 yards of me.
Yeah, I
Why
can
don't
take my
I
time
it?
On the run-up. Well, maybe
that
I don't even
adds
have to.
So much, that's even funnier to me now.
Right.
He was the whole time, he was just completely nervous.
Because there's no way the design is to hesitate three times, hiccup
right.
twice, and then start to cut back for
no
reason
you're right.
to go all the way
I'm watching
left.
This again, not only because of the release and the blocking and stuff, which is a tell, but he's clearly, like, he sells it very well if it's design, like he's about to punt. But he definitely, like, hesitates and almost punts two times.
Yeah, none of his teammates are turning around. I mean, to me, this is on his own. So it reminds me of a couple years ago, this is an obscure reference, but in the College World Series, LSU is playing in a game, and they have one of these weird quirky substitution things where some pitcher that's in the game convinces his coach, I hit nukes in high school. And the coach is like, all right, get up there and hit, but don't swing. And the guy cracks what ends up being like a game-winning double for them to win. And then the press conference reveals, yeah, coach, I didn't hit in high school. And the coach is like, wait a minute, you lied to me? And the guy's like, yeah, I just wanted to get up there and swing. It reminds me of that, where it works out. Like, what if
Great
it doesn't?
Moment.
What if he falls down? You know, like he'll never hear the end of it.
there is this other great moment. Now we're elbow deep in this thing, but the lead blocker. So the lead blocker starts out, it's like his PP, right, his personal protector. So like the guy who's like 7 yards behind the line yelling, "Hut," and they snap the ball to him. He's got his hands on his knees. So he's waiting for the punt. At one point, like, looks behind him, like, what is going on back here? Did he drop the ball? And then he sees the punter still has it, and he kind of starts running to lead block, and there's no one in front of either of them. When the guy stops and goes the other direction, he's like got this, like, incredulous thing where he just turns around and starts sprinting the other side of the field, like, where are you going? What are you doing? As if he's worried that this guy's panicking and, like, just going to run out of bounds. Oh, it's my favorite play that's ever happened. I love it so much. You only get this stuff
so good
in college football. Like, this kind of stuff, I don't know why. You don't even see it in high school, really. It's just weird, college, quirky nonsense. And we've got video, and it's all over the internet, and it's the best. Things that you love, things that you hated from Washington's win over the Bengals next on Grant and Danny. Thing you love, thing you hated from yesterday's win over the Bengals. I'll start with a thing I hated. Joe Burrow tearing his ACL out for the season. Pretty easy one to throw into that pile. He was rolling, just picking Washington apart. 22 of 34, a couple hundred yards and a touchdown on his way to perhaps a career game, the way his first half unfolded with the highest completion total that anybody in the league has had in the first two quarters of a football game. And then it all came crashing down in a fashion that, you know, left your stomach in knots. But hopefully he gets a full, healthy recovery in the next calendar year. And by this time next season, he's slinging the football around and right back to what he was doing as a rookie and improving upon that to become one of the great passers in the league. Danny, something you loved, something you hated.
Loved what happened on defense in the second half. I mean, in the first half of this game, you're talking about 250 yards, basically, of offense for the Cincinnati Bengals, right? 247 yards is what they finished halftime with. And they ran out of time after a turnover from Alex Smith. 247 yards at the half. They finished with 272. That's not many yards in the second half. I believe 25 total yards in the second half, if the math checks out. Somebody could tell me if I'm off there. But that's incredible. That's quite frankly incredible. So I really, really like the second half defense.
Thing I really liked was that they hit on a shot to Terry McLaurin for 40-plus yards, took the lid off the defense on the 42-yard completion. I liked the McLaurin performance again. Thing I liked, Cam Sims, 2 targets, 2 catches, 20 yards. Very much less involved this week. All I can ask of a receiver, though, is to be invested when you get your opportunities to perform. They highlighted him not once but twice on the telecast for blocks on running plays. Did you notice that?
I didn't, no.
By the way, I thought Adam Archuleta, who did some silly things like calling Terry McLaurin Tony a couple times, was largely entertaining and pretty good. But two different times he pointed out Cam Sims as a blocker on a run play where he had some success. It's what he did well at Alabama. He's a big guy. He's willing to stick his nose in and to hit people in the running game, which I love. But he both of the times the ball got thrown to him, he caught the football for 12 and 8 yards, and on both plays he made a little play after the catch. So I continue to like what I see from Cam Sims.
Thing I didn't like, just kind of flipping the scripture from the second half to the first, I didn't like the first half defense. I know that the sort of, you know, I don't want to say the excuse, but the explanation is going to be, well, they threw it quick, and they did sometimes. They did throw it quick sometimes, but they didn't throw it quick every time. They were able to move the football, talking about Cincinnati with Joe Burrow. He was very, very comfortable there. So if they're going to throw it quick, do something about it. Try to do something else besides what you were doing. Cincinnati was moving the football with ease. They sabotaged their way out of points a couple different times, whether it was missed field goals, going for it on fourth down, the play that frankly changed the game. Chase Young not getting after the passer in the backfield, but chasing down Joe Burrow on a scramble, looked like it was going to be a touchdown after he cut inside of Troy Apke, who, you know, whiffed, frankly, close to the goal line. Chase Young made the play of the game to me to sort of change momentum in this one. But in the first half, they were on pace for close to 500 yards. That just can't happen against a team like that.
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? Because early in the year, they're giving up no yards, but they're allowing points. Mm-hmm. And people go, well, yards don't matter. How many points are you giving up? And then yesterday, they give up a ton of yards, but not many points. And people go, well, you can't give up that many yards. And I'm not saying you're this culprit, but there are people that do this, that unless they just dominate and suffocate and everything is good, they're going to be frustrated because you leave something to be desired. But choose one of the two of those, right? You can bend and not break and give up the yards and not the points or whatever. And obviously, 4 of those points left on the field by a kicker, 7 if you count in your 60-yarder. But I will take, you know, process, generally speaking. I think the better process was the earlier season stuff, where they're not giving up a lot of yards, but they're giving up more points because of short fields, and they're, you know, they're not getting the big stop or forcing a field goal on one given play or something like that. Whereas yesterday, I thought, particularly in the first half, the process was worse. The result was better, which was they didn't get in on the goal line, the Chase Young play you referenced. Which brings me to the next thing I really liked, impact plays from Chase Young. It's one thing for us to sit here and to rewatch games like I did last week and to talk about the number of times he's doubled or chipped or, you know, they ran away from him or threw away from him, where they obviously, there's no doubt in my mind after rewatching Detroit, went into that game worried about Chase Young very clearly. So how many other times this year has that happened? I don't know. But I want impact plays. It makes it really easy to make the case that this guy's really good. People can see it. The hit on the goal line, the near interception. How athletic was that play when he went up and got that football? And he almost picked that. I mean, it was a, you know, a hard throw right to the hands, but it kind of stuck right on his hands, it seemed like, rather than just bouncing backwards for 5 feet. He almost had a pick. You mentioned the TFL, I think, on the goal line as well. So that's something that I liked. Something I didn't like in this game, I would go with the inability to establish anything on offense, you know, in the early going. We talked all week long about starting faster, you know, getting something going. They had one touchdown drive of any kind of merit in the first half, and it was the 8-play 76-yarder. It was a beautiful drive for Scott Turner, like a take-a-bow, awesome drive, the short yardage, Logan Thomas under center play, a couple of the things they did, including the deep shot to McLaurin. But other than that, 4-for-13 where they had a first down and then a three and out. Three and out on a three-yard drive with a Logan Thomas drop. Three and out where they had 9 yards and they didn't convert and had to punt. They had 5 plays, 24 yards the last time they touched the ball in the first half. They went three and out, people sleep, on their first play, their first drive, the second half.
That's right.
Then they went and got a touchdown on a 55-yard drive where they got a short field. Then they got a field goal on a 28-yard drive, again, where they got a short field. And they had the one really long, lengthy, impressive drive in the second half, 14 plays, 80 yards. But you're looking, Danny, really at two great drives for this offense. There were some other decent ones, 4 and 5 plays, but, like, that doesn't get me that excited.
Yeah, I didn't like their first half offense, and I was going to touch on it. That one touchdown drive was really good. They were humming, clicking on all cylinders, moving the football. That was great. Other than that, Dwayne Haskins could have done that. 2 3-and-outs, an interception, right. You know, the 4 plays on their first one. I need more than that early in games. And I was excited. They got a lead for the first time in what seemed like a month. I mean, they got a lead against Dallas, obviously, and kept it as they dominated that game against an inept group. But, you know, they still don't have an opening drive score. Also, I'm not even talking about a touchdown, an opening drive field goal. They still don't have one this entire season, which is almost impossible to do. 10 games, 10 opening drives where they do not have any points on the board. It's uncanny at this stage. I need something early on in this game. And again, their second drive, they got a touchdown, deserve credit for that. But other than that, uninspiring results in that first half. A faster start. I'm not saying you got to be fast, the greatest show on turf, and put up 30 points a half. I am saying it would be nice. It'd be nice if they were able to mount multiple meaningful drives in a half.
I'll dismiss their last two drives, which were kind of nothing game script drives. What I mean
Agreed.
Is they took over with 3:56 to go. And they turned it over on downs on like four plays where they missed a field goal. And that was the Dustin Hopkins missed chip shot. They went minus 1 yards on 4 plays. They basically just ran the ball and tried to run a little bit of clock and then kick a field goal. They took over at the Cincinnati 19-yard line. So that drive is not an actual drive. The next time they got the ball, 4 plays, 8 yards, the end of the game where they end up taking a knee. So if you take those two out of it, it's not even just that they struggled in the first half. It's really, again, the whole game. I mean, they had 2 long drives and 1 other drive that was longer than 30 yards. Mm-hmm. 6 and 28, 5 and 23. Like, those were their second half drives. 5 and 55 for the touchdown when they got the ball at the 45-yard line after a takeaway. I mean, that's not good enough. And it won't be good enough on Thursday against the Cowboys. So while they did enough on offense to get to those 20 points, they won because their defense in the second half of this game, and you can make the case it was a Burrow-related renaissance, but turned it around. They gave up 7 net passing yards, 1 first down conversion on 3rd down, 2 first downs total, 25 total yards and 18 rushing yards in the second half. That's why they won. It's not like their offense ever really got humming or got going. They did run the ball a lot better, and that helped them put the game away, which is great. But that didn't turn into long, sustained drives other than once in each half, which just isn't enough. We will preview Monday Night Football before we get out of here. We'll hit the best of the rest and the leftovers as well on G&D. We got a strong Monday Night Football game tonight. We'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. Some of your top stories in sports today. We start with the Ravens closing their facility. Positive coronavirus tests. They're supposed to play Thursday against the Steelers. Look, Danny, the league has done a really good job pushing through the virus, and more importantly, they have done a really good job at avoiding losing any of their marquee primetime games. This is a real test now because this is Monday.
Yep.
The game is Thursday. You cannot switch out games, I wouldn't think. There's no way to just have two teams play Thursday night because you can't afford to lose a Thanksgiving evening TV bonanza. So that would just mean you'd only have the 2 day games on Thanksgiving and you'd miss out on that opportunity. You know they will do everything they can to get that game in, but that's a lot easier said than done if four positives become six or seven or eight in the next couple days.
Absolutely. I mean, you just hope just for the schedule because, again, Pittsburgh and Baltimore have already moved once, and it was an easy move. You just changed a bye week. I can't remember which team now just had to move their bye week up a week, and they played for the first time, and it was no problem. Well, this is a problem. When you do a short week, when you don't have much grace period and extra, this is where it starts to get complicated. I just am hoping that it's not an outbreak and it's just isolated as much as multiple cases can be.
Did you see the terrible offensive pass interference call that screwed Purdue over this weekend?
I did, yeah. The guy that just went and caught a pass and they said pass interference.
All he did was ran a route, caught a touchdown, and it was ruled pass interference as if he pushed off when there was absolutely no contact in a Purdue's game against Minnesota. It was as bad a botched call. Minnesota was up 34-31, 52 seconds left. Purdue would have gone ahead with the touchdown in the final minute. Jeff Brohm said the team's just moving on and they're not going to be commenting on it. That he spoke to the Big Ten office after the OPI was called. I hate it because the officials have a bad job, but that's one of those where it's such a terrible call. This is the time where you need to be able to buzz down and say,
nope.
You're ruining the game. This is 100% wrong. Everyone at home knows it. Everyone who sees the replay that you don't get to see right now knows it. And you're costing a team the game, very likely. We cannot allow this to happen. And they should just have some, like, siren that sounds at the top of the stadium to let them know, do not play another down until we get this right, because we're trying to talk to you from wherever our hub is. The ensuing play after a penalty, after the OPI, was like a first and 25, and they immediately threw an interception. And so it cost Purdue the ballgame.
There are certain moments in refereeing history where controversial calls happen, right? I mean, Don Dechinger in the World Series cost the Royals, and that fifth down game, I think it was Missouri and somebody. Those are the kind of times where you're right. Just a buzzer that just says, nope, I'm talking about extreme cases. The bar must be super, super, super high to use like the buzzer of God to basically say this is not a thing, but I think we need that. I don't know how to implement that. I don't know how to write the rule. I just know there should be somebody on site that says, hey, this one's not close. Don't waste your time. Like, I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Melvin Gordon in the Broncos-Dolphins game, right? Gordon is on his way to the end zone, fumbles at the 2-yard line. One ref kind of trots down and is like, touchdown. Dude, it wasn't close. It literally wasn't close.
That was such a bad call, and they did reverse that eventually based on replay. But watching it in real time, it was so obviously a fumble.
Yeah.
He was nowhere near the end zone. He, like you said, he might have been at the 1.5 or 2 yard line. And the guy said touchdown.
He trotted in very slowly, looked around, had zero confidence in his touchdown. You know, the most confident guys signaling score are the Australian rules football guys, right? They step out and do that like six shooter thing with two hands, and it's demonstrative and it's real, and you know they believe it. That guy didn't believe his touchdown thing. He was looking for someone else to say anything. When nobody did, he kind of gently raised his arms over his head. And he's like, touchdown? Like, that's how the script would have read.
The running in from either pylon, on the goal line, when a guy clearly broke the plane, And for some reason, like, the guy's now dancing in the back of the end zone, and they're still talking, and now they're going to raise their arms. What are they saying? I'd always want to hear, what are they talking about? What'd you see? The guy has been up off the ground now and is literally, like, dunking the football on the goalpost.
Yeah.
How are we still discussing if he got in and now we're going to make that decision confidently and I'm supposed to believe you? I don't get the spotting of things occasionally. Like, they'll come running in at 1 yard marker and then they'll just spot it and they'll move it 2 feet. Really, really weird.
Happens all the time.
I don't know that there's a better way to do it. It's just kind of what we do. We just, I guess, the spotting of the football is hilarious because it's the best they can do with this fairly impossible task, and you can't challenge it because there's 22 bodies, and what, are they going to move it 6 inches or something? It's so inexact, and so many people's, you know, well-being and mental and physical health, like, rely upon this. It's hilarious. A Monday Night Football tonight, great matchup. 6-3 Rams, 7-3 Bucks, as good a primetime game as you'll get for a little while on the slate. L.A. and Tampa Bay both considered Super Bowl contenders in the NFC. Rams defense has become one of the best in football. Tampa Bay's is also outstanding, not quite on the level of L.A.'s this season. You got Jared Goff and Tom Brady under center for these two teams, both running offenses led by architects that are considered among, you know, the real cerebral, intuitive guys in this game, and Sean McVay and Bruce Arians. I'm excited for this game tonight. I like the Rams, actually, a little bit more than I like the Bucs in this spot. What about you?
Fascinated to see what happens here. The story, believe it or not, are these defenses in this game. Tampa's is excellent, and the Rams might be better in some metrics. So you look at what happened when Tampa's played an elite defense against New Orleans. They managed a field goal a couple weeks ago. So I'm wondering if you're going to see something in store like that, where the Rams get them into bad down and distance. You know they can cover. You know they can get after the passer. On the flip side, the Bucs are excellent on that side of the ball. I think we're going to get a sneaky low-scoring game, which I think favors the Rams in this one. I'm with you, but I mean, we may look stupid tomorrow if the Bucs are as good as we think they can be and roll, but I like the Rams. I think they need it more.
Here is my hipster kind of pretend-to-be-smart guy analysis. Ali Marpet, the guard for the interior lineman for the Bucs, is out. Mm-hmm. They downgraded him yesterday. He is great, and when they don't have him, their interior offensive line is problematic. I think Aaron Donald just takes the game over. And I think the interior of the Rams' defense from inside out gets to Tom Brady, and we've seen this now a bunch throughout his career. When you can pressure coming straight up the middle, it's way more effective against him than coming off the edge. So I think that ends up being a factor. But we'll break it down tomorrow for sure as we start looking ahead to Washington and Dallas. Big thank you to everyone who listened to the show, as always. Brendan back in the saddle, Tommy on the production as well. For Danny, I'm Grant saying so long. We're back at it at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning right here on Grant and Danny.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.